Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. This is where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination to juice and inform and guide our lives. We have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Victoria Rabinoway. I've known her since 1993. Think of that, when synchronicity brought us together at a dream conference in Santa Fe, her kind of town. She has a beautiful book just out. I wish this were video so I could show you, because it is illustrated by the artist herself. The title is Conversations with Psyche. The subtitle is A Dreamer's Guide to Soul-Stirring Creativity. And I will tell you, Victoria, and tell our listeners, just by way of introducing you, that when I read your book and started looking through the 55 activities, dreaming arts activities that you suggest, for us to do better than analyze dreams, just to bring their creative and healing energy into life. As I read through them, I had to pause from your book and go and do a couple. The one familiar to me, but you mobilized me. I mean, the first was to draw from the dream. Actually, I draw or paint from my dreams several days a week, sometimes every day a week. So that's familiar, but I took a dream from some months ago I hadn't done anything with, so that was a new step. And then I've written poems from dreams, but I decided to do the very basic, simple version you recommend, which is to take dream report, turn it into three verse, fool around with it. And as I did that, the report became more and more interesting, and a dream I hadn't really thought about very much now or then began to come alive, both in terms of its meaning, but even more in terms of its energy. And then just, you know, because three times makes the charm, then I did something else you recommend, which was to turn the longer poem into a 17-syllable haiku, which required doing what you talk about as blackout writing, which is you drop a lot of words and see the essential ones that remain. So in saying this, I've introduced our guest, Victoria Rabinoway, as someone who gets you moving, gets you into motion. And dreams require that. Dreams require action. It's why I called my original approach to dreaming and shamanic journeying active dreaming. We want to get active with our dreams, bring their energy into the world. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I vividly remember the circumstances of our meeting back in 1993. Let me give you a little bit from my point of view and then tell us a bit just to take us into the swim of what dreamers think about how they interact. So I just flown back from London, 1993, and I had asked for information from what was then called the ASD, the Association of Study of Dreams, and heard nothing. But when I get home, I find there is a flyer or a brochure in an envelope from ASD announcing a conference in Santa Fe in 3 days' time. I don't beat around the bush. I bought a plane ticket and I went. I knew no one. I mean, you absolutely no one. We've got, what, 300 people there? But they're all in dreams. They range from, you know, neuroscientists and physiologists and Freudians to shamans and artists, including yourself, really wonderful artists. And there I am in the first breakfast group. There you are sharing dreams. And I didn't like that group all that much. It did more for you, so I went somewhere else. And I started making friends. And by the time I left that conference, I'd made, I would say, 50 good friends I've stayed in touch with over the years, with multiple attitudes and practices relating to dreams, because dreams can afford to have many, many perspectives. And synchronicity crackled throughout, including the kind of synchronicity that gave you the flyer in your hot hand in Santa Fe and got you there, and gave me the flyer but made me travel a bit further. So that's where our first meeting took place. And that, I gather, is when your own understanding that dreaming could be part of your practice, your coaching, your teaching, your life in a bigger way, where that came into realization for you.
That's exactly what happened. I was on a search for the source of creativity. I was already an artist in the sense that I was a craftsman. I was weaving and spinning and dyeing and putting beautiful colors together and shapes. But I wanted to be what's called a real artist. And I was so frustrated because I didn't know, I knew how to do art, but I didn't know what to do, what to make something meaningful out of. And so when I started a practice very similar to yours, Robert, of active imagination, and just sitting and imagining shamanic journeys or active imagination, whatever you care to call it, and going in and imagining different stories. And they were very interesting, and they were not like making stuff up. They really were a product of some other connection with a separate reality. But I still always had the chance that I could go left or right. I could make conscious decisions. And when I encountered the dream world, I realized, wow, this is stories that are coming without my conscious interference at all. And I really am someone who likes to control my waking world. I like to be organized, and I like to know what I'm doing. And the dream world provided me with an entrance to an open vision that was not controlled by anything that I determined. And it was a total world of reception, of receiving storylines and information that had nothing to do with my control. And that's where the interest became really the most vital, active interest for me.
Your enthusiasm for all of this streams with your talking, and it streams through the book as well. Thank you for that. I mean, it's arousing. I mean, you arouse people. You light them up. You make them realize that there's passion, adventure, story here beyond the ordinary. Victoria, I don't set very specific intentions for dreams very often. I used to, and I decided I really wanted to be just more open to what comes. But when I do set an intention for the night to follow on from what you were saying, I often just say I'd like a new story or I'd like a new adventure. Sometimes when I say the latter, I'll add something like, and I'd like a happy ending. I'd like to come back juiced and full of energy, or I'd like to bring back something I will want to draw or write from. I might add that. But it is about the story and the adventure. So let's start where a lot of people will be interested to hear us talking. How you start your day. You write about this in the book, but, you know, you're a dreamer. You're an artist. You're trying to link to the tremendous powers of the dream space. So how do you start the day?
Well, when I'm fortunate enough to recover a dream, that's the very first thing I do. I don't get up. I stay in bed. I stay backwards. I don't try to think about all the tasks and promises and events of the day coming forward. I try to stay in as empty a space as I can, and I scribble down whatever I can of the dream. And I may have done this through the night. So I have, by the bed, I have a story, and it may be very sketchy. I will get up then, make a cup of tea, go right back to the computer. In this case, I love my computer, and I love to flesh out the dream. So I write up the story, I give it a title, I give it a date, and then I also try to write a little information about what's going on in my life, what has perhaps influenced some of the obscure references in the dream, and also what are some of the emotional things going on for me. And that way I have a document of the dream that I can always find again. The title is probably the most important thing because it means I've reread the dream and I've excerpted some very vital single thought that will recall that dream as I'm looking through my journal. And then what I will do is I'll take some of the obscure references and I'll just riff and I'll contemplate and I'll just spend a few minutes saying, well, oh, Aunt Rosalie, I haven't thought of her in so many years. Aunt Rosalie, oh, she was a tyrant. She was a difficult woman, and her hair was dyed red, and she was really kind of irrational, And, and my mother, and she did not get along at all. And I would just riff a little bit like this. And then I would go on maybe to another one of the images and say, had a car in the dream. And I think, well, what car? Which car? It was the first car I ever owned. It was my ticket to freedom. It was yellow. Just information about that car. And then I would go down through the dream about the actions, what's really happening in the dream, what are the memories, what are the emotions it brings forward. And then the quickest way I can work with a dream is to simply rewrite the dream without any of the original vocabulary. And so having deconstructed it, I have all these different ways of talking about the images in the dream, and I completely wipe out the original text and rewrite it. And you would be amazed. That is simply the simplest, quickest, easiest way to get a hit off that dream. And it's very satisfying.
Okay, so we're deep into the activities that you recommend right off the bat, which is great. I must say, I do not do the practice that you just described. I might give it a try sometime. Very interesting, it's having the effect on you that you describe. I just must pause to note a literary synchronicity, because you threw me into a dreamlike episode from last night when you chose Rosalie as an example of free associating with a dream. I have been indulging myself in reading the original French edition of the Marquis David de Saint-Denis' book on dreams and how to guide them, Les Rêves, les moyens de les diriger, which is known to students of lucid dreaming in English, so it's not only about lucid dreaming, but it's been available in English only in clunky translations. And my French isn't perfect, but it's good enough for this, and it's a familiar voice. Anyway, so here I am, reading a book originally published in 1867 by a very interesting French aristocrat and sinologue. He is professor of Chinese at the Collège de France, and he's giving multiple examples from his own journals, which is the kind of book on dreams that I value, because I don't trust any writer on dreams, nor I think do you, who doesn't write from their own experience quite openly. I mean, dreaming is not a spectator sport. The most important information about dreams comes from inside the state of dreaming itself. Anyway, here I am reading The Marquis, middle of the night, and enjoying myself enormously. It's like I'm sitting by the fire with an old friend, a literary gentleman with common interest. He starts talking about the name Rosalie. He has about a page on the name Rosalie. And what he's doing is he's talking about how puns or homophones, things that sound alike, can generate dream imagery. Well, in French, Lee is bed and Rose is rose. So he describes how when the name Rosalie, which I think was a family connection of his, came into his mind, his dream took off, creating some kind of vessel. I think it was a boat covered in roses, with a bed in the middle of the boat in some sort of triumphal voyage down the water. And I'm just mentioning this because it's an example of how life rhymes. I mean, dreaming is about what happens in regular life as perceived in the hints of synchronicity as well as everything else. You've already taken us into some of your practices. One of them that I want to comment on and commend is one that you describe in the book as matching your dream reports up with your life log. You've already explained something of what that means. You're dreaming something. What are the circumstances around it? What is the context? These days, I put everything in my journal. I mean, including drafts of book chapters, which I then separate out and put in a different folder. I don't want to separate any of it. It all flows together in my dream journal. So this might include looking at the context of life in which a dream unfolds, but it also means putting it all together. Like you, I will record a dream when I have one before I do anything else. I've taken to doing this on my cell phone and to writing a draft email to myself. I rather like the fancy that I am emailing myself from inside the dream state. When I put it on my phone and email it to myself, before I have coffee, I will go to my computer and I will write up a version. I no longer do handwritten dream reports very often because I'm not traveling, when I used to do that all the time, and I can't read my writing. But I will quite frequently spend at least a few minutes doing an initial sketch from the dream and then painting it or coloring it and so on. So that's how I start. Victoria, you have 55 activities in your dream book. We want to go through some of them. But I think before we get to that, people would be very interested to hear you talk about how dreams have companioned you. I think that's the phrase you use. Dreams have companioned you on your life journey, on your odyssey as an artist, expressive arts teacher, and dreamer. And you give a number of examples. I noticed reading you that there are recurring images, which you probably noticed yourself. And it's interesting that when I'm talking about Rosalie, I'm also talking about a boat on a river, because one of the recurring images that comes up in your dream reports, as I recall, is of a relationship with a boat and a river, whether there's the right captain on the boat, whether the boat has a captain at all, you know, that kind of thing. So clearly, as you keep the record of your dreams, you are developing your own dream dictionary, right? Your own dictionary of personal symbols and how they evolve.
Yes. And I have about 300 pages of my own dream images, which amuses me to isolate and cut and paste. So I do also, like you, I use the computer because I can also pull up all the boat dreams. So
yes.
If you and I were talking about boats, I would just go in there and grab them all. But I do use several in the book. I do talk in the beginning. Why you're mentioning this is there's 36 different dreams about why I can't write and why I can't write this book, and so that feeds into this directive of how dreams have guided me, because my conscious self says, who are you to write a book? You're a visual artist. You're not a writer at all. And so yet the dreams come. And so aside from my conscious self-denial and judgmental, horrible self, the dreams are telling me something completely different. They're telling me that there is there's magic afoot, that there's angelic beings. I don't believe in angels, but angelic beings are coming to hold my hand and guide me. The Buddha is behind me. The Dalai Lama comes and holds my feet, which are where my soul is. So the dreams give me an authenticity that I have never given myself. So especially a woman growing up in the later part of the 20th century, we were still so much unliberated under the thumb of so many misguided ideas about what a woman could be. And I was totally sucked in by that a woman can't be a writer and can't be an artist. And yet the dreams are saying, yes, you can. Yes, you are. Yes, you must. And so the dreams totally guided me into a whole new way of acknowledging the fact that I exist, that I am talented enough to do whatever I want to do. And the dreams themselves are such a font of creativity. They're so complex and wild and weird. And they're these stories, and they're mine. They're no one else's. I was trained, you know, as an English major reading early 20th century literature. But they were studies, but they weren't really about me. They weren't about my path. And the dreams are just so illuminating in ways that we don't think about ourselves. And again, in the projects, which we'll talk about in a minute, it gives us a chance to embody different versions of ourselves. And so we get to try on different personas. We get to try on different suits. We get to play at being different animals and different vehicles and different personalities. And we can mess around with all of that as if we were in a different play every night. And that gives us a chance to try these different suits on. And we can then see where our comfort level is and where we're driven, where we're guided. And it's an amazingly vast universe inside of each of us.
Well, you issue a wonderful invitation to the Dream Adventure. It's compelling. We're listening to Victoria Ogunaway. We're going to take a short break. Her new book, I strongly recommend. Give us the title and subtitle of your book in your own voice, Victoria.
The Conversations with Psyche. A Dreamer's Guide to Soul-Stirring Creativity.
And where can people find you online?
Amazon. It is self-published, so Amazon has the book, and it's on 35% discount right now, so it's really good time to get it.
I think how people are smart enough and shamanic enough to find you on Amazon. I was really asking, do you have a website?
Oh, I have a website. I'm sorry. My website is victoriadreams.com.
VictoriaDreams.com. Yeah, I do think that the shamanic trackers you on Amazon, and I recommend that you do. So we're talking to Victoria Rabinoway. As I've mentioned repeatedly, one of the great things about this book, Conversations with Psyche, is the range of simple and very creative exercises and practices that she offers. She explains them very lickety-split, very, very briefly and engagingly, and they're things that you can do in minutes in many cases. She then, at the end of the book, demonstrates how she's worked all 55 of them with the dream of her deceased beloved dog, Molly. So she again, once again, refers back to personal experience, which is what you want any teacher or author of dreaming to do. Let's use Robert Mars, Way of the Dreamer. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of the act of dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Well, you're back with Way of the Dreamer with Robert Ross. I'm having great fun with our guest, Victoria Rabinoway, and you'll have great fun with her and her book, Conversations with the Psyche, as well. Let me prompt you to go over to my website, mossdreams.com. We've announced a number of new online courses, including a mega adventure running for 18 weeks, starting with the Shift Network in August, titled The School of Imaginal Healing and Dream Growing. You'll find the current status of my trainings for teachers of active dreaming, which have been remarkably effective online. Years ago, I would have astounded me if you told me we could do trainings of this depth online. But not only are we doing them, we have even been doing dream theater via Zoom. Victoria is a fan of dream theater. It's my favorite thing in-person workshops. But if you told me until very recently, even that can be done on Zoom, I would have been amazed. Anyway, Victoria is here, of course, to arouse us to do more of the dream adventure, also to give us some suggestions about things we might do that we haven't tried. Victoria, your business about deconstructing a dream is an exercise I haven't tried. You also, one other exercise you recommend that I have not personally tried yet is, quote, compose an emotive letter addressed to one of your dream entities. Now, I've done dialogue with dream characters many times. I've stepped inside them and written part of their autobiography, but I don't think I've ever written a letter to them. Of course, in some traditions, this was a popular thing to do. The Egyptians were forever writing to dead people, asking them to intercede in a law case or some other case. So let's start with that one. Compose an emotive letter addressed to one of your entities. Why should we even think about doing this? And if we're going to do it, how do we proceed?
Well, in many cases, the dream entities disturb us or awake some kind of feeling in us that shakes us up a bit. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a nightmare, but we usually wake up with some kind of emotional hit. And this gives us a chance for our waking selves to engage with our sleeping selves, because the sleeping self is actually awakening a part of us that we may not be conversant with. And so this gives us a chance to breach that thin line between waking and sleeping, and it gives us a chance to engage with the difficulties or the problems or the challenges that the dream presents.
Okay. So,
so we can use our waking voice to engage the sleeping story. And I change
all
voices
right.
all the time. I mean, you say there's 55 projects, and one of the best tricks I know is to change from voice to voice. So we want the characters to have a voice. We want the animals to have their voice. We want the inanimate objects to have a voice. But the letter writing actually gives us a chance to use our own waking voice, because even in the dream, our dream voice is different than our waking voice. Does that make any sense?
You're reminding me that although I haven't practiced this in relation to, let's say, an every night or every day dream, I used to recommend it in some of my workshops when people needed to settle their relations, particularly with the departed. There have been continuing problems, so maybe a sense of the departed were around in ways that were not healthy. And a way of resolving this very often was to encourage the person who was having these difficulties, often reflected in dreams, to write a letter to the departed, basically saying, I love you and all is forgiven now, please fight your way to where
well,
you need
or,
to go.
Or not. Or not.
Yeah.
It gives you a chance also to rant and rave and to get really volatile. It doesn't necessarily mean, dream work for me doesn't necessarily mean making everything nice and cozy and comfy. A lot of the projects in my book are about ranting and letting it all hang out and getting emotional and getting angry and getting, crude and rude and wild. So I'm not necessarily a proponent of making everything all okay.
Well, Victoria, you were mistaking me if you thought that's what I was saying. I was talking about very fraught, very edgy, very challenging, very emotional situations in which writing the letter became part of a complex, cadenced approach of healing and resolution. There's nothing cute about these episodes. I was just reflecting on where I have found something like what you recommend of writing a letter to a dream character to be useful. It wasn't about being cute. I can assure you, you would not have found any of those
situations
cute.
I do love the idea of writing to someone who's departed, and I do think that one can resolve a lot of issues by writing those letters.
Well, yes, let's just be clear about that. I was just reflecting out loud about where I have done something like this and recommended that others do something like it, but it had nothing to do with being cute. And since you spoke passionately about letting the wild and raw stuff out, I'll quote you from your own book. Knowledge of the shadow is essential to a creative's toolbox. The dreaming arts uses discomfort as fuel for juicy writing and art making. I wrote a poem about this, right from the place of blood, basically. So talk to us a little bit about that, because, you know, people have their ups and downs, they have their wild moments, they have their moments of, you know, they're self-destructive and they're deeply depressive moments. I know, as I think you do too, from the way that you were just talking to me, that there can be great creative gifts in taking the raw power of emotion, even emotions tagged as very negative by the world, and working or creating from it. Some of my best writing is done when I basically started out in a state of grief or rage, but been able to harness that raw energy and point it in a certain direction. And I think this is true in many creative lives that we know about. So talk to us about how the expressive methods that you give us in the book can help people who are going through something to turn, let's say, the force of negative emotions and the fear induced by dark dreams, to turn that into creative action.
Okay, well, that's exactly it. The book is about creativity. It's not about psychoanalysis. It's about finding the juice in all of the expressions of the dream. So I'm assuming that your audience are formed of creative people, whether they're professional writers or actors, or they're just creative souls that love to write and make art and to dabble in the unknown. So the point for me of doing the dream work and shifting voices and getting to know the most horrible aspects of the victims and the perpetrators is to make creative expression. And so you cannot write a novel if you don't know your villain from inside out. Bad person, good person. You have to know each one of those characters. So that's where the juicy writing comes in. If we can detach from our knee-jerk reaction to the good and the bad and the ugly and really dive deeply into those things with our full throttle of our emotions, that's where the creative energy comes, and that's where everything emanates. And do we need to understand the dream? No, we don't need to have a psychoanalytical approach to the dream. We're mining it for the juice. And
right.
Invariably, the dreams do wind up meaning a whole lot to us, but that's not what I set out. That's not the intention I set out to. That's not the boat that I'm riding in. I just want to experience the highs and the lows of each dimension of the dream. And so the projects all look into the corners and look into the secrets and the mysteries and the crazy stuff and just go with it and go with the flow. And it's
all right.
I talk to,
This passionate lady in full flow has to be stopped for a moment. We have to take a break. You're listening to Victoria Rabinoway, whose passion for this is running at flood tide. We'll be back to hear more about creating from dreams. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our awesomely passionate guest, Victoria Rabinoway, is inciting us to bring our curiosity and our potential creativity to the table when thinking about dreams, and to do more than think about dreams, to act from them, to act out of them, not act up, but act out of them. But so we're going to turn it over to her in a moment to go wherever she'd like to take us. But first, I want to raise one of the practices or activities that she writes about in her book, which I find really intriguing. She invites us to invite Alice, like Alice in Wonderland. Invite Alice to wander in our dream world asking questions about everything. This is a very juicy suggestion. Tell us what you're inviting us to do, Victoria.
Well, Alice in Dreamland is one of my favorite projects because we've talked about enacting and finding the voice of each of the characters, but we invite Alice as an outsider. She's an innocent little girl asking very reasonable questions, and yet the answers that she gets make no sense. They're nonsense. So we all know Alice in Wonderland, and we all have experienced the truth in the nonsense that she hears from each of these characters. So I invite Alice to come into your dream and ask perfectly logical questions and allow the dream figures to answer in any way they want. So again, we're not looking for analysis. We're not looking for answers. We're just listening to the dream characters, whatever they have to say. And they can spew all kinds of nonsense, or they can spew some very special pearls of wisdom. But we just open ourselves to that experience, and it's like a dream reentry, very much like the work that you do, Robert. But we introduce this outside character, and especially because Alice is so young and innocent, she is not asking leading questions. She's just totally in the place of not knowing, and she's totally curious.
I love it. I'm actually picturing doing it with a dream right now, the same dream that I pulled out of an old journal when I was reading you a few days ago and started writing and drawing from. I'm also thinking it's related to, it's got a 3D or beyond 3D quality that this lacks, but it's related to what I call the space alien game. You've done some version of this. You know, you're helping someone to understand a dream or trying to understand your own dream, and you start talking as if to an alien from a different galaxy who doesn't understand humans, doesn't know what's going on in it. You start trying to explain, you know, who Brad Pitt is, or what a refrigerator is, you know, or what a yes. what a movie is, and what pops out is sometimes quite interesting. But the idea of putting it in the whole 3D or 3D plus environment, having this Alice character wander around and ask the dream characters, is really fun. Really fun. You've got so many practices here. You were saying to me during the break that there is one or two aspects of this you'd really like to talk about. What are those?
Well, I'd just like to, I'm sure most of your listeners know this, but to underline it, that the key tool of dream work for creativity, or for any dream work for that matter, is to be curious rather than trying to figure out what someone else's dream means or your dream means. Is to simply be open and curious. And the thing that made me a dream worker was not reading Jung or Freud or studying for a PhD, but to simply stay in the place of not knowing. And so the Alice figure is exactly that. Not knowing what the dream means, we walk into it purely innocent, and as you say, going with an alien attitude, so that what is a refrigerator? What is a boat? What is, what is Aunt Rosalie? We ask as if we never knew, even right. if we assume that we do know. And it's most, most eloquent and interesting when we do that.
I failed to mention that my almost everyday practice, it probably is my most basic everyday practice with dreaming, and dream work is to accept a research assignment or detective assignment. I get things from my dreams, and I suppose because I'm a bookish fellow, I get lots of funny words, place names, phrases from other languages, historical references, etc., which in the age of Google, I can start researching immediately, and actually my home library is vast, my own library offers options as well. So my days often begin, sometimes the whole morning is consumed with following research leads that the dream gives me. And this isn't about dream analysis. It's got nothing to do with dream analysis or dream interpretation. It's about following the leads. An analog would be a moment in Jung's life that was destroyed by one of his apprentices. The apprentice is telling Jung a dream which involves a location in India. Jung goes to the bookcase, pulls out an atlas, and opens to a map of India and says, show me exactly where the place is. I mean, I'm like that, but more so. I mean, my research goes on and on. So I not only have the attitude is I don't know what's going on, I have the attitude is I'm going to do some research and find out. But my attitude, although bookish, is otherwise rather indigenous. In indigenous cultures, they don't do psychology. They ask about dreams, who, what, where, when, and what are we going to do about it? What are we going to make from it? What art are we going to make? What talisman are we going to make? How are we going to apply the healing? But like them, I play detective with dreams. Not to wrap the dream up in some ribbon of bow of supposedly successful analysis. I have no interest in that. But to follow the who, what, where, when, why. That opens very interesting paths in this world and other worlds. So,
I am a researcher like you too, and I would say that the best dream dictionary, online or otherwise, is the dictionary itself and the thesaurus. And especially for creative writing, to see the language that we use in the dreams is very often different from the way we express ourselves in waking. And so we want to look at those words that we choose very carefully, along with the puns and the plays and the idioms. They're very interesting in that. And again, like you online, boy, you can just zip right through. Free Dictionary is one that I use. And it has everything from Wikipedia to Britannica to Thesaurus to Dictionary to Idiomats, and even antonyms and synonyms. It's so easy to really do some exciting research. And, of course, like you, going into mythology and religious studies, things that I don't have a library with all of that background that I can access through Google, that makes dream inquiry and the detective work interesting and exciting. Again, it will inevitably be deeply meaningful, but that's not where we start the search. We start the search from just wanting to know more and to open ourselves to things that we could never have known. We're time traveling and space traveling, and we're experiencing things we never encountered in this incarnation or whatever, however you want to look at it. And yet our dreaming mind is connecting us to cultures and time spaces and all kinds of information that, how do we know this stuff? How do we connect with it? Well, Dr. Google seems to be able to help us really put all those pieces together and open us up to this magical world of alternate reality that we find ourselves in.
Once again, you're very engaging, very, very alluring. You're giving us all sorts of reasons to play more and better games. I wonder whether we can talk about another of your games that I've not played, although I've dreamed about it. I've dreamed about this. I dream about new dream work techniques, turning a dream into a board game. Can you talk about this?
You bet. That's my favorite. That's another favorite, I should say.
Well, actually, let's postpone the discussion till we come back for our third, for our final 8-minute segment, so we don't cut off. Turn dream into a board game. I dream of board games, and sometimes like Goody Bull, the old Celtic version of complicated chess, they're living beings and the pieces on the board. But so board games of various kinds are featured in my dream for as far back as I can remember. And sometimes it's consonant with scenes in mythology, like one that fascinated Yeats of old Celtic kings, tribal kings, playing Goody Bull, Welsh version of something like like chess with living figures. Anyway, we're talking to Victoria Rabinowitz. Good stuff, passionate stuff. You're going to get some more games to play. But, of course, to read about and have the instructions in front of you, you want to look for her book, Conversations with Psyche. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
All right, Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do go to mossdreams.com and look in particular at the new programs and trainings I'm offering. Our guest is Victoria Rabinowitz. Her new book is Conversations with Psyche. She's promised to talk to us about turning a dream into a board game, and then she's asked to talk about synchronicity, which in my lexicon is the dreamer's way of dreaming 24/7, and collage. So, Victoria, let's first of all hear about turning a dream into a board game.
Okay. Well, many board games really are very similar to mythic journeys. They all start with a home. You start at home and you go off on a journey. And the journey is often a dark and light. We win and lose, back and forth. All kinds of outwitting opponents, mastering rules, gaining control over conflicting forces. And the board game itself can be like a miniature landscape that we travel through, where we can be knocked off our pins, we can be advanced. And so when we try to turn the dream into a game, we start on a journey. And we kind of have to realign all the players and the characters in the dream and try to figure out, how are we going to maneuver through the dream landscape, and what are the terms, how are we going to win the game or lose the game? And it gets I guess my favorite thing is to scramble your conscious mind so that you really can't make organized decisions about how this is going to work. You have to sort of go into an alternate state to actually, like Alice, go into the dream and see how who are going to be the pieces, who are going to be the playing pieces, what are the shortcuts and setbacks, what are we playing for, what's the goal of the game, how do we move through the dream, how do we slide and return and advance, are there wild cards, are there directives, what are the obstacles, what are the penalties, what are the rewards, and it kind of reorganizes the dream into something else. And of course, the question is, what is the goal of the game, and how do you win or lose it? And it really scrambles your dream, and it makes you see it in a whole different light.
I'm very interested. I'm very interested in this. In one of my advanced trainings, we've been doing a lot of imaginal cartography, by which I mean that we map visually and in great detail landscapes, buildings, structures in the imaginal realm that we have been visiting and developing together. Bringing the element of gamesmanship and the bits you're talking about might be interesting. It might be actually tried out with one of the very detailed maps we have prepared. So you're giving me another creative idea. Thank you. All right, you asked to talk about synchronicity, which is my favorite way of being in the waking world, and collage. What would you like to tell us about that?
Well, I guess my absolute favorite thing to do with dreams is collage. And in my workshop, we work with found material, found images from magazines, newspapers, text and image, because you may have this blockbuster dream of all these big events happening, and in the corner is just a tiny little dash of blue smoke, say. And you just don't even pay attention to that because there's just so many big things going on in the dream. And yet, when you start looking through magazines, pictures, hopefully good quality art, architecture, and all your National Geographic, you keep finding the color blue, and you keep finding a smoky, vague pictures of weather, perhaps, or veils in blue. And suddenly you realize you have to pay attention to that corner of the dream that was so small it almost vanished from your consciousness. And so the synchronicity of what you find leads you on a journey through the dream that you would never have taken if you were simply trying to analyze the dream or take it apart. And so that's a collage will... And each day you can work the same dream over and over and over again, and each time you do it, you're going to find a different emphasis. You're going to find real surprises in the sound image that will guide you in ways that you could never have done rationally.
Right. Well, I like that too. I'm just looking over things that I pencil marked, so to speak, in your book. Here's a very simple statement, which I agree with, and it's so important to repeat to us. You're talking about big dreams and little dreams, and then you say quite simply, no dream is truly small. I'm all this. I mean, I find that so many wonderful things happen for people when you encourage them to stay with that tiny little nub of a dream, that wisp, that fragment. In itself, it can lead to all sorts of extraordinary things, even without further development, other than maybe, you know, playing creatively with it. Sometimes it's the first of a trail of breadcrumbs that takes you to a structure, an adventure, a novel, a story that you didn't recognize. Sometimes we dismiss dreams as small because they don't seem to be full of epics and princesses and dragons and so on, but might reflect the circumstances of everyday life, which can seem a bit small and mundane and blah. But so dreams that seem small in that sense can be the ones most likely to give us some very specific prompts about things that are developing in the possible future, not on the grand scale, but on that, you know, smaller, intimate human scale that we live in. So that's a very important recognition. You don't need to belabor the theme that this is not about analysis. One of my psychologist friends said early on when I entered this scene, thank goodness, Robert, you're not a psychologist. I was, to the extent that I've ever been an academic, I was a professor of history, of ancient history, but history as I understand it is a history of ideas, not of fixed theologies, but of ideas in motion, and the account of how humans manage to stay on this earth, what they do to get through and what works and what doesn't. So I've always had a slightly evolutionary view of dreams, and I don't mean in the boring Western progressive sense that we're meant to progress from stage one to stage two to stage three, but wanting to understand what is going on with people in a certain culture, in a certain state of the world, certain state of the mind, as experienced through the dream adventure. And having said that, I'll also add, having been looking again at the whole history of dreaming in the human enterprise, that I don't really think we are necessarily all that different from our ancestors who were painting cave lions and horses, you know, in the ancient grottos in southern France and Spain. I don't know that our brains have actually changed that much, and I don't know that our potential for connecting with the deeper reality is altogether gone, even though Western cultures have done so much to suppress it. The oldest understanding of dreams that I am aware of is that dreaming is traveling. we go somewhere beyond the body, beyond the brain, or receive visitations from those who have a similar ability. And whether that's your observation of dreams, your experience of dreams or not, it does lay us open to what you're inviting us to do, which is to part the curtains of ordinary perception, more magical, more creative space. And thank you for doing
I have the most deep respect for psychoanalysts, and in fact, most of the people that come to study with me are psychotherapists or healers of some kind that do have this alternate attitude, but they all agree that the creative approach and what you're talking about is the most potent way to travel through this mysterious land.
There is hope for all of us, Victoria. All right, we have to take our last break, dear. And then we'll be back just really to say hail and farewell and dream on. You've been listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Well, I've had fun. I hope you have too. Our wonderful guest has been Victoria Rabinowi. Her new book is Conversations with Psyche, and you can see that she is passionate. There's a Moroccan tribe that values poetry above all else. They say all poetry comes from flooding. Victoria, thank you for flooding us happily with your joy and exuberance in relation to creative dreaming.
Well, thank you, Robert. It's a treasure to be able to talk to you and with all your vast experience and your enthusiasm for this wild and wonderful world inside of us.
Thank you. All right, everyone. May your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.